Continuing Fayakel, we mentioned yesterday that when the call went out to give to the Mishkan, everything was collected within 48 hours, and then there was enough given probably the third day for any needs they would have for quite a while. And they, for the first time ever, a charity campaign said, Dayenu, don't send any more stuff. And the rabbi pointed out last night that generally, when a donation is given in staka, Chazal and everybody considers that the gift is given b'chol levav, with all of our hearts. In other words, it's given and whatever we hand over belongs to the recipient, the organization. The rabbi told the following story. In Eretz Yisrael, 2 weeks before COVID hit, someone was planning a chasana for his child, and what he was going to do was he was going to serve beer. And so he bought 250 bottles of beer, and he was going to use it for the simcha, for the suda. What happened, of course, is COVID hit, and now you're in a situation where all you could have were 10 people for a chasna in Eretz Yisrael, and so he obviously had no need now for 250 bottles of beer. The other thing the rabbi pointed out is that many people in Israel do not sell their chametz, and this individual was one of those people. And so we had a problem. What do I do with my 250 bottles of beer? Do I take them and flush them down the drain or what? And then he said, hold on. There are a number of weeks left, and the shul that I go to has shalashudis every week, and I don't understand how, but they were still having considerable numbers of people. And he called the gabbai up and he says, I have 250 bottles of beer. Can you use them up in the remaining weeks before Pesach through shalashudis? And the gabbai said, yes. He took his car, brought over the beer, and done, fine and dandy. Then, 3 weeks later, he calls the gabbai and he says, I would like my empty bottles back because I want the refunds on the bottles, whatever that may be. And the gabbai says, no, you gave them to us. When you give us a donation, we keep whatever comes, including the empties. Whenever we get bottles of wine, we keep the empty bottles. And the guy goes back and he says, yeah, that's fine when you get one or two bottles of wine. It's one thing. But I don't know how much the refund would be. But he wanted this refund. And so they decided they'd go to Rav Zilberstein and ask the Shaila, what do we do? So Rav Zilberstein said that normally we make the assumption that, as with in the case of the Mishkan, a gift is given wholeheartedly and it's hook, line, and sinker, and the bottles, right, would belong to the shul. He said, but, he said, let's look at the circumstances here. He said, the individual who gave the bottles was in a pickle. He didn't really want to give away the beer and the bottles. And maybe had he known that he would have had a problem getting the bottles back, he might have basically, you know, put them out and thrown it out, whatever. He would have disposed of it. And he says, I cannot make the assumption that this was a gift given everything wholeheartedly. In his mind, he never gave you the bottles wholeheartedly, and therefore, he said, my psak is that you've got to return the bottles to him. So someone asked the question, that's fine and good if the bottles still exist. And apparently in this case they did. But what if the bottles had been picked up by all the Koreans, right, who walk around and pick up cans and everything? And I guess there's some of those guys in Eretz Yisrael as well. And I think then the case would be, okay, while he's entitled to them back, once they're gone, the shul doesn't owe him any money. But it was an interesting point, the rabbi said, how you can't always make assumptions that hold true. Okay. This Shabbos is Parshas Shkolim, and so we get to read last week's Parsha's beginning all over again about the mitzvah of giving the Machzis HaShekel. And we spent last week almost exclusively on the matter of the Egel. So I want to take a look at this Parsha. The Torah teaches that we are not allowed to count Jewish people in an ordinary fashion. And when a census has to be done, it has to be done by people contributing items to be counted. In the Midbar, the people, rich and poor alike, gave half a shekel for the construction and the upkeep of the Mishkan. We're told that the status of Klal Yisrael, of the people, is elevated whenever there's a communal attempt for charitable causes. And this was considered, or was demanded by Hashem, to be the manner in which any census would be taken. The Pasuk says you should count heads. This means that the contributions given to the Mishkan were not only for the purpose of the Mishkan, but they were also to count the people. The fact that everybody gave half a shekel, no more, no less, was symbolic that every single Jewish person must share in the communal goals. We have to put aside our personal and possibly selfish interests when things are required by the nation. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu promises infinite benefit because, as Rav Hirsch points out, Klal Yisrael's success only occurs when there's unity. We look at the first pasuk and it says that the census was kofer nafshi l'Hashem. It was some sort of tshuva, atonement for the soul. It says, there's a great power when Klal Yisrael is united, moving towards a good common goal. Everyone joins in the cause, and the spiritual merits of each individual become merged. It's not just the money they gave, but it's all that they bring to the table, all their mitzvahs. And this exponentially raises the spiritual level of Klal Yisrael. It says, the Kuzari, I think, that no human being can adequately survive being looked at as an individual by Shemayim, by God. Because we're human, and I think it says, Ein Adam bi Olam shelo yechteh. There is almost no person. It says there isn't any, but we know Binyamin was the exclusion. That nobody sins. Everybody sins during their lives. And it would seem somehow that the ideal human being would be sin-free. And that's not something we can attain. So we have this two problems. We should be, but can't. When we have unity, things change. All of a sudden, the Aveira I may have done was not done by my chaver. The mitzvah someone else neglected, I did better. And as a result, the combination of the nation is a combination of having been Mekayim, all 613 mitzvot. We know that no Jew can do every mitzvah. A Kohen Gadol can't be metame. It's gotta stay away from Avelim. The only time he can get involved is a meis mitzvah, a body on the road. A non-kohen can't duchen, can't bring the avoda. Only the king has to write two sifrei Torah. So we see that Torah and mitzvot, while given to each of us as a mission, has to be a mission done as a member of Klal Yisroel, uniting with Klal Yisroel. And that is what brings us the greatest reward. The national collective is judged much more favorably than any individual or small group. And the Kuzari says that's one of the reasons we need a minyan. It's a davar shebikdusha. For some reason, the combination of 10 adult males creates a certain sanctity that allows us to say kedusha, allows us to say kaddish, allows us to lane. Rabbi Sherman, in his Stone Chumash, says, we know that there was a lady who built the hut for Elisha, right? She told her husband, Elisha comes by, let's put an attic onto our house so that when he comes by, he's got a place to rest, to refresh himself. And Elisha, the tzaddik that he was, wanted to say thank you, and he asked the lady, is there something I can do for you? Can I speak to the king? Can I speak to one of his officers on your behalf? And she said, Besoch ami ani yoshevet. No, I am someone who is living amongst the people. I don't want to be singled out, she said. I don't want special divine attention. I only want to be judged based on the Kabbalah that I have amongst the many. She said, the Rabbeinu Bachya says, if she were singled out, she would be judged more strictly in a Kaddish Baruch Hu's scales of justice, since especially we're told by the Zohar that this situation occurred on Rosh Hashanah. We know, in fact, that Elisha prayed that she have a son, and we know the fact that the son became ill, and Elisha restored him to life. I think we're told that what either Eliyahu or Elisha's person they brought back to life became Yonah Hanavi. The word true monkey Sisa is mentioned three times, meaning there were three separate gifts of silver. Two of them were required gifts of a half a shekel, and the third was a voluntary contribution of any amount of silver. The two required contributions were to cover the cost of the temple offerings for the year, and the second one was the one-time contribution of silver for the sockets in which the walls of the Mishkan rested. The Mishkan, so to speak, was held up by its sockets. And God wanted every Jew to have a piece of the socket. Every Jew had to be involved in maintaining the physical as well as the spiritual basis or base of the Mishkan. Everyone, whatever social or economic status the person had, became an equal partner in the Mishkan, which was HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, commanded, to bring together Klal Yisroel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could rest his Shekhinah among all Klal Yisroel. And in the continued communal offerings, this was the nation continuing to do HaKadosh Baruch Hu's beckoning each day. We're told in the Mishnah in Shkolim that the half shekel was collected during Adar, so that the funds would be ready for Nisan, which is we call the first month, and that's when they started again from the new treasury items. Therefore, we have the minig to read Parsha Shkolim before Rosh Chodesh Adar, or in some years we read it on Rosh Chodesh itself. And so we are going to read it this Shabbos, where when we're going to do Birchas HaChodesh for Adar Beis, the second one. He says, in today's day and age, it's customary that we give half a shekel in the currency of the nation we live in, meaning U.S. I think U.S. silver dollars, and we know when you go to shul, you get this package of three representing all three of the times they donated. And it is a minig Yisroel that everyone gives the machzis a shekel. Generally, it's commanded on adult men over the age of bar mitzvah. But we know that we are told that there were people who gave for their minor children too. And once they did that, I think they're required to continue to do so. It says that Bifkodo sum, the fact that this methodology has to be used when counting them is mentioned twice. Not just for Moshe's time, but for all time. The Gemara tells us that the King David erred, and he thought that this only applied to Moshe's time, and he actually had a normal type census, and unfortunately, he brought a plague upon the people in Shmuel Beis. Right? Then he realized the problem. Another interpretation is that it's inconceivable that David HaMelech, who was a gadol hador probably in learning, could make such a mistake. It says he used coins or some other method. He didn't do a direct count, but it says, the Ramban says, he didn't have a compelling reason to have a census then. And so, whenever a census is not really needed based on the needs of the community, it should be avoided. We're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe a matbeya shalesh. He showed him a coin of fire. And he said, this is what they should give. God showed Moshe that money is like fire, that Noam Elimelech says. You've got to use it right. And fire can be used both for good and for destruction. And Rav Mendel of Kotskez, if one seeks atonement in giving funds to charity, as we learned earlier from the Rav's comments, this mitzvah should actually be done with a feeling of enthusiasm, which is the fire of our souls. Okay. All right. Okay. We're going to stop here.